When Debbie Millman launched her podcast, Design Matters, in 2005, few could have predicted its meteoric rise to become one of the world's most influential creative platforms. What began as a modest vanity project has evolved into an award-winning institution with over 40 million downloads, featuring conversations with cultural titans from Milton Glaser to Michelle Obama. Praised by Tim Ferriss as creating a uniquely safe space where guests find themselves disarmed and unable to rely on rehearsed answers, Millman's interviewing style has been described by her wife Roxane Gay as possessing a rare ability to ask unexpected questions that elicit genuine vulnerability. Beyond its industry accolades, Design Matters has become what Gay calls a gloriously interesting and ongoing conversation about what it means to live well, overcome trauma, face rejection, learn to love and be loved, and thrive both personally and professionally. Milton Glaser, the legendary graphic designer behind the iconic I Love New York logo, believed designers bear significant ethical responsibility as communicators. His 12 Steps on the Designer's Road to Hell framework examines how designers compromise ethics, from making packages appear larger than they are to creating advertisements for deadly products. Each step represents an increasingly serious ethical breach, from relatively minor deceptions like visual trickery and packaging to more severe violations like promoting harmful products or supporting discriminatory causes. Glaser personally drew his line around step 5, arguing designers should acknowledge their ethical choices rather than pretending they have no responsibility. He emphasized that every design decision carries moral weight, whether creating nutrition labels that obscure unhealthy ingredients or developing marketing campaigns that target vulnerable populations. Glaser criticized the First Things First manifesto for failing to provide realistic alternatives for designers working within capitalism, while maintaining that designers have a special obligation to speak out against media consolidation and the merging of business and government interests. He advocated for a middle path that acknowledged commercial realities while preserving ethical integrity, suggesting designers could influence positive change from within the system by choosing clients carefully and pushing for truthful communication. This sense of responsibility extends beyond visual design to all creative fields. Alison Bechdel, the acclaimed cartoonist whose Fun Home became a Tony Award-winning musical, chose comics as an anti-elitist and populist medium to document the vibrant gay and lesbian subculture invisible in mainstream media. Through works like Dykes to Watch Out For, she created authentic representation when few others would, demonstrating how creative choices can fill crucial cultural gaps. Her groundbreaking work, including the famous Bechdel test for female representation in film, demonstrates how creative work can challenge cultural blind spots and inspire systemic change in media representation. The question of ethical responsibility takes different forms across disciplines. Cindy Gollop, founder of Make Love Not Porn, created her platform after noticing how pornography was becoming default sex education for younger men. She observed that without alternative models of sexuality, unrealistic pornographic depictions were shaping harmful expectations and behaviors. Though not anti-porn, Gollop's work creates a new category of social sex, showing real-world intimacy to combat the harmful effects of porn-influenced expectations. Her platform features user-submitted content showing authentic intimate moments, creating what she calls real-world sex in all its messy, silly, glorious, wonderful humanness. Her life philosophy centers on identifying personal values and living accordingly. You will never live the life that you really want to live if you care what other people think. This approach demonstrates how creators can address sensitive topics while maintaining ethical standards and promoting positive social change. Seth Godin, marketing visionary and best-selling author, emphasizes the importance of helping people identify and dance with their fears rather than trying to eliminate them. His remarkable persistence, from sending creative marketing materials to Faith Popcorn for years despite rejection, to receiving 900 rejection letters before his first acceptance, stems from separating his ideas from his personal identity and immersing himself in a culture of generous persistence. Godin attributes his success not to eliminating fear, but to developing resilience through consistent action despite it. He advocates for viewing rejection as data rather than personal failure, demonstrating this philosophy through his daily blog posts spanning over a decade, each representing a small risk taken in public. This theme of transforming fear appears repeatedly among creative luminaries. Anne Lamott, beloved author on spirituality and resilience, describes how sobriety at age 32 improved her writing despite her fears that it would diminish her creativity. She advocates for wasting time as a radical act, encouraging writers to space out and stare into the middle distance like a cat, behaviors essential to creativity but often discouraged in productivity-obsessed culture. Lamont's approach involves treating fear as a natural companion to the creative process, suggesting writers should expect it, acknowledge it, and continue working anyway. She emphasizes the importance of shitty first drafts as a way to bypass the paralysis of perfectionism, arguing that all good writing begins with terrible first attempts. Photographer Albert Watson, who was born without vision in his right eye, demonstrates how limitations can become strengths. Despite not being a technical person, Watson committed to mastering photography through years of practice, developing unique compositional techniques that compensated for his monocular vision. His approach emphasizes communication over equipment. The photographer's best weapon is not his lighting and not the camera, it's his communication skills. With subjects like Steve Jobs, Watson prepares meticulously, researching extensively, and crafting specific directions that elicit authentic expressions. His sessions with Alfred Hitchcock, Andy Warhol, and Kate Moss became legendary for their ability to capture revealing moments through careful preparation and intuitive direction. Artist Marilyn Minter transformed her chaotic childhood with a drug addict mother and an alcoholic father who was also a compulsive gambler into provocative art exploring sexuality and beauty standards. Though she faced harsh criticism, her show closed early, she received excoriating reviews, and she got kicked out of the art world, Minter persisted. She embraces failure as essential to creativity, continuing to make nasty things that metaphorically express feeling out of breath during devastating times. Her controversial work, including the Porn Grid series and hyper-realistic paintings of dirty feet and designer shoes, challenged conventional beauty standards and eventually earned her recognition in major museums worldwide. Minter's resilience demonstrates how confronting and channeling personal trauma through art can lead to breakthrough innovation, even when initially met with rejection. Brené Brown, whose groundbreaking research on vulnerability has transformed how we understand human connection, explains that true belonging requires the spiritual practice of believing in yourself so deeply that you can share your authentic self with the world. Through thousands of interviews, she discovered the paradox that people habitually hide their vulnerability while actively seeking it in others, driven by a deep-seated fear of being seen as unlovable or weak. This fear manifests in various behaviors, from perfectionism to people-pleasing to emotional withdrawal. Brown emphasizes that heartbreak is inevitable when pursuing work you love. If you live a brave life, the only guarantee is you're going to get your ass handed to you. Just know that is part of the process. She illustrates this through examples of artists, entrepreneurs, and leaders who faced repeated rejection before achieving success. This vulnerability extends to intimate relationships in profound ways. Renowned psychotherapist Esther Perel observes how modern relationships have evolved dramatically from historical norms, creating unprecedented emotional demands. Traditionally, marriage was primarily an economic arrangement, while love and passion existed outside marriage, often through socially sanctioned arrangements like courtly love or extramarital affairs. Today, we expect one person to fulfill an extensive list of needs: intellectual stimulation, emotional support, sexual satisfaction, best friendship, and soulmate connection. This one person for everything often collapses under these impossible expectations. Perel rejects the notion of the one and only, believing many people can make suitable partners, and suggests that infidelity often stems from a search for aliveness, not necessarily sex, but a quest for freedom, agency, and transgression. She notes how the digital age has complicated this further, with technology creating new forms of intimacy and betrayal. Tim Ferriss, drawing from his own battles with depression and anxiety, shares his practical fear-setting exercise for managing vulnerability. This three-column approach begins with define, listing specific potential negative outcomes in vivid detail, from professional failures to relationship losses. The prevent column identifies concrete ways to reduce risks, such as building safety nets or developing specific skills. Finally, the repair column plans how to rebuild if things go wrong, creating a practical recovery roadmap. This structured approach to vulnerability helps reveal that our fears are often defeatable or reversible, transforming vague anxieties into manageable challenges. Ferriss candidly acknowledges his lifelong struggle with self-hatred and how he channeled that into becoming a sharp instrument of competition, pursuing goals not for joy, but for the relief of not losing. This pattern, common among high achievers, often leads to success, but at the cost of genuine fulfillment and connection. Anand Giridharadas critiques elite philanthropy, noting how billionaires like Mark Zuckerberg support limited social programs while avoiding systemic change. He observes that Zuckerberg presents himself as a liberator of mankind while doing business like Genghis Khan and undermining industries like media. Despite concerns about polarization, Giridharadas remains hopeful that citizens are awakening to citizenship, recognizing that you are only as good as the country you fight for. This commitment to truth-telling appears in visual form through Edel Rodriguez's provocative Trump covers for Time magazine and Der Spiegel. Rodriguez, who left Cuba during the 1980 Mariel boat lift at age 9, approaches his political work with deliberate brutality. You don't appease fascists. His Der Spiegel cover showing Trump beheading the Statue of Liberty, inspired by both ISIS imagery and his own immigrant experience, became his most controversial work, reflecting his dismay at policies he compares to Castro's Cuba. Carmen Maria Machado, whose short story collection Her Body and Other Parties explores gender and sexuality, describes herself as a ruthless pragmatist who wants to believe in magic. Her work found resonance during the Trump presidency and hashtag movement, addressing what she calls this crisis about gender that many women were processing. Machado values short stories as laboratories where she can experiment, comparing them to one punch to the nose versus a novel's day-long beating. Linda Barry challenges the notion that you need to do something well to do it at all, comparing it to thinking you shouldn't ride a bike unless you can match Lance Armstrong. She sees drawing as both expressing and generating ideas. Drawing can go not just from your head to the page, but from the page, up your hand, and into your head. Barry credits her teacher, Marilyn Frasca, with the transformative advice that whether she liked her own drawings was none of your business, freeing her from judgment and allowing her to see her work as having the same right to exist that I did. Chanel Miller, whose sexual assault case gained national attention when her assailant, Stanford student Brock Turner, received a controversially light 6-month sentence, demonstrates the transformative power of reclaiming one's narrative. Initially known only as Emily Doe, Miller's victim impact statement went viral, reaching 11 million readers in 4 days. Through writing her memoir, Know My Name, she not only revealed her identity, but reconstructed the narrative on her own terms, challenging the media's portrayal and the court's minimization of her trauma. Her journey from anonymous victim to outspoken advocate illustrates how writing can serve as both personal healing and social catalyst. Cheryl Strayed's transformative 1,100-mile Pacific Coast trail hike, chronicled in Wild, exemplifies how physical challenges can reshape personal narrative. Hiking in 1995, before smartphones and social media, Strayed experienced genuine solitude that allowed for deep introspection. Her relationship with her oversized backpack monster, weighing up to 70 pounds, became a metaphor for life's burdens. She developed the concept of retrospective fun, the understanding that difficult experiences, while challenging in the moment, create valuable resilience and compelling stories. This wisdom served her in numerous life challenges, from completing her memoir to enduring a 36-hour labor with her 11-pound son, drawing on the inner strength she discovered on the trail. Gabrielle Hamilton's journey from wandering traveler to acclaimed chef owner of Prune Restaurant reveals how personal narratives shape professional vision. During her youthful travels, strangers' acts of hospitality in moments of genuine hunger, a farmer sharing fresh bread in Greece, a family offering shelter and soup in France, formed her understanding of food's emotional power. These experiences influenced Prune's intimate, honest approach to dining. When COVID-19 forced Prune's closure after 20 years, Hamilton used her platform to challenge industry narratives, writing influential essays about restaurants' unsustainable business models and advocating for systemic change, including fair wages and better working conditions. Oliver Jeffers' artistic evolution demonstrates how embracing personal style reshapes creative narrative. His artistic journey began at age 11 in Belfast, where teachers recognized his talent and enlisted him for school play decorations. Initially struggling to emulate other artists' styles, Jeffers' breakthrough came when he discovered that his quick, imperfect sketches resonated more deeply with audiences than polished work. His background in divided Belfast profoundly influenced his artistic perspective, leading to works that explore duality, perspective, and interconnectedness. Conversations with quantum physicists further shaped his understanding of multiple realities, reflected in books like Here We Are and The Fate of Fausto, which have connected with millions of readers worldwide through their authentic, questioning approach to existence. Michael Bierut, partner at Pentagram and creator of iconic designs for clients ranging from Harley-Davidson to the New York Jets, challenges conventional notions of creativity. Rather than viewing himself as possessed by an irresistible and inexhaustible source of self-expression, Bierut approaches design pragmatically, saving creativity for when it's absolutely necessary. This practical approach has defined his professional philosophy, where he prefers working within established limitations rather than starting each project from scratch. Nico Muhly, a contemporary classical composer with unusual crossover appeal to younger audiences, challenges the notion that forced musical training lacks joy, arguing that playing music is so awesome that even if you're forced to do it, it's great. Muhly finds profound inspiration in church music, valuing how it creates atmosphere without drawing attention to itself, serving a greater narrative rather than being self-referential. Though commissioned by prestigious institutions like the Metropolitan Opera, becoming their youngest commissioned composer, Muhly resists genre pigeonholing, seeing his classical training as simply his foundation rather than a constraint. Elaine de Botton, the prolific author known for works like The Art of Travel and How Proust Can Change Your Life, deliberately collides rational philosophical analysis with emotional experience, putting Plato in the kitchen to forensically examine the minutiae of romantic relationships. De Botton suggests we fall in love partly to escape ourselves, projecting perfection onto others through what he calls the crush, that instantaneous, often deceptive certainty that someone embodies our ideal. Mike Mills has cultivated a remarkably diverse creative career spanning graphic design, filmmaking, and visual art. Despite feeling self-conscious around figures like Tibor Kalman and Kim Gordon early in his career, Mills found freedom in his creative work. The work was always a place where I could be bigger or braver than I am. For his filmmaking, Mills draws from personal experience, particularly focusing on things that truly confuse you, believing that questions gnawing at you and tearing you apart make for compelling material. Erin McCone, musician and playwright who has toured with artists like Ani DiFranco, views singing as the most intimate act a musician can perform, completely metaphorical and physical at the same time, connecting to childhood and the very essence of wanting to be heard. Her songwriting philosophy embraces abundance rather than preciousness. You have written songs before, you will write songs in the future, hopefully you will write so many that you can't count. She compares the process to fishing, requiring the right spot, tools, and patience, but accepting that some days yield nothing despite perfect conditions. Amy Sherald, whose portrait of Michelle Obama brought her national attention, developed her distinctive grayscale approach to painting black skin as both a technical and philosophical choice. I knew I wanted to make these images and these paintings of black people that were just that, paintings of black people. When asked why she exclusively paints people of color, Sherald points out the inherent bias in the question. I don't think white people sit around and think, I'm only going to paint white people. They paint their ideal selves, and I'm painting my ideal self. C. Adams, a foundational figure in hip-hop's visual language, began in New York's downtown graffiti movement before becoming founding creative director for Def Jam Records. Despite traveling the world with the Beastie Boys and Run DMC, where people treated you like royalty, Adams remained focused on his craft rather than fame. He explains his philosophy. I'm working behind the curtain. The job of a designer is to execute the vision of the product or the person you are working for. It's not an opportunity for you to shine as bright as you can. Your job is to make them shine bright. Malcolm Gladwell explores why humans are poor at detecting lies despite evolutionary pressures. Counterintuitively, evolution favored those who trust others because implicitly trusting others is enormously rewarding and statistically correct since the number of liars and sociopaths in the world is quite small. This default to trust enables positive social relationships and cooperation, but occasionally makes us vulnerable to deception. The reason sociopaths and liars get away with their lies for as long as they do is not because they're geniuses. It's because we're not built to spot them. Amber Tamblyn, actor, poet, novelist, and political activist, describes how poetry became her salvation, a third parent and guardian, offering complete creative control, unlike acting, where you are creating something that's only really half yours. A founding member of Time's Up, she emphasizes the responsibility of white women to engage with diverse perspectives. Our ability to understand where people come from and the way in which some communities of women have been held back more than others, we can't have any of that unless we are having deeper, more complicated conversations with each other about what is missing. Emily Obermann reflects on her three-part career journey, from working with Tibor Kalman at M & Co. to co-founding Number 17 with Bonnie Siegler and finally joining Pentagram. She credits Tibor's influence on her design philosophy, particularly his emphasis that good ideas come through rigorous exploration. This sometimes manifests as a belief that torture is integral in getting to the right idea. At Number 17, she and Bonnie built their business organically, without loans or a formal plan, simply wanting to do good work for smart people for products we liked. Chip Kidd, renowned book designer at Nuff and creator of iconic covers like the dinosaur skeleton for Jurassic Park, explains to young readers that most of the decisions you make every day are by design, and defines graphic design as problem solving and sometimes making something really cool in the process. He illustrates this concept with examples like the speed bump, a brilliant design solution where understanding the core problem, people driving too fast in pedestrian areas, led to an elegant solution beyond mere signage. Brandon Stanton, the photojournalist behind Humans of New York, believes that understanding someone's complete story, including mental health struggles and past trauma, makes even disturbing behaviors more comprehensible. Through his prison interview series, Stanton identified a fundamental schism in America between compassion and accountability that appears in every comment section on his blog. His approach of collecting portraits globally has created a community of followers who are notably kind and public-spirited, raising millions for causes and gathering petition signatures for refugees. Amanda Palmer discusses her approach to music in the internet age, where fans can support artists directly rather than through traditional payment models. Her experience as a street performer, standing as an 8-foot bride statue, provided valuable lessons about the relationship between artist and audience, teaching her to accept that you are not in the driver's seat when performing. This foundation of mutual recognition carried into her music career, where she maintained an intimate relationship with fans who became family and collaborators, ultimately supporting her record-breaking Kickstarter campaign. Sarah Jones, Tony and Obie Award-winning playwright and performer, began performing poetry in 1997, the same year her 18-year-old sister died of a heroin overdose. This profound loss freed Jones from fears about others' opinions and career concerns, allowing her characters to emerge authentically. Despite opportunities like MTV's Lyricist Lounge Show, Jones walked away when asked to portray stereotypical characters that contradicted her values of authenticity and integrity. Thomas Kyle, director of Hamilton and In the Heights, believes in creating space for multiple voices rather than seeing others' success as limiting his own. His partnership with Lin-Manuel Miranda began in 2002 when they finally met after Kyle had been sitting on the script for In the Heights for 2 years. Their initial 5-hour conversation felt timeless, with Kyle describing it as a life-changing Ratatouille moment. Kyle's directing philosophy centers on creating a respectful environment where talent can flourish, prioritizing humanity over talent every time. Amina Tuso, born in Guinea and raised around the world, created an online meeting hub for women in technology after being told women and technology don't mix. Her resilience stems from her family background, her parents making brave choices that shaped her identity, including her father treating her equally despite their conservative Muslim background. She rejects narratives about inherent Black women's strength, noting, "We all have the same emotional reserves everybody else has, but our lives can be more challenging. And if you're choosing to live, you're going to tap into that."